This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, KNX family. Welcome to a very special LA local for Friday, March 14th. I'm Jonathan Service, sitting in today for Alex Silverman as he annoyingly gets ready to run the LA Marathon, by the way, which is coming up on Sunday. Guaranteed to make all of us feel bad about ourselves as thousands of fit and motivated runners hit the streets of Los Angeles. So look for that. On today's LA Local, we're going to bring to you a special we aired last night on KNX called Fired Feds. I produced the special, had the honor of talking with a lot of the Southern California-based federal workers who lost their jobs during the purges of DOGE and the Trump administration. Without even getting political about what's gone down over the last six or so weeks, there's a way that politicians tend to talk about the federal workforce that dehumanizes them. So the idea with the show that you're about to listen to is to give some names, some personalities, some experiences, and some very personal impacts of their job losses so that the next time you hear statistics about thousands of federal workers losing their jobs in this agency or that agency, you get a sense of what kind of people are working for you and me and our taxpayer dollars. Coming up next, a very special edition of the LA Local, Fired Feds. Enjoy.
From KNX News, 97.1 FM.
This is Fired Feds, Voices of the Government Layoffs.
A KNX in-depth special.
Well, like him or not, voted for him or not, there's no doubt that Donald Trump, alongside Elon Musk, wasted no time trying to remake the government. The executive orders, the court cases, the purge of federal employees, mass firings over the last 2 months. Welcome to our KNX special, Fired Feds. We're going to give some names, some voices, some stories to these tens of thousands of fired federal workers who've been pushed out of their jobs, a lot of them fighting to keep those jobs. Mike Simpson here with you, and we will be hearing from some Southern California-based workers who lost their jobs from these DOGE cuts. They're now dealing with a lot of uncertainty for their careers, their families, their futures. We're going to do some numbers first just to get a look at the scope of all this. There's no official count as to how many workers have been laid off, but the estimates from USA Today expecting at least 100,000 federal workers when all of this is said and done. That's on top of roughly 75,000 who took the offered buyouts. They voluntarily left. There's an estimated 3 million total federal workers, not including the active duty military, the millions of the contract employees. And outside of D.C., the biggest concentration of the federal employees, they are right here in California. And here in the studio with us tonight, we have Ellen Willis Norton, biologist with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. That was within the Department of Interior. She focused on preserving the ocean fisheries. Keenan Chan, biological service technician, diver, park ranger. He was at the Channel Islands National Park, so National Park Service, again, Department of Interior. And Liesl Drew was an anthropologist and a tribal engagement specialist working with California Native tribes, shoreline, offshore energy projects, Bureau of Ocean Management, again, Department of Interior. Thank you all for coming in and spending some time with us and giving your stories. I want to get into the details of each of those over this hour. But first, I want to start by hearing a little bit about those jobs that you had to give people a sense of, you know, something more than the basic description, right? I don't always like the what do you do question, because that's the resume or the icebreaker thing. I want to know what was most important to you, the most rewarding part of these jobs. So I'm going to give the title again, and then you tell me that part, and then we're going to dig in from there over the next hour. So, Ellen, our fisheries biologist, what mattered to you most?
So, yeah, I was the fishery subject matter expert for Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Pacific Region. So that's California, Oregon, Washington, and Pacific Islands. And so I did a number of different things. I would say the thing that mattered the most to me about my job is I was in charge of outreach to fishermen, fishing communities. So basically when there was any sort of offshore energy development plan, so leasing and then development. So that's for oil and gas, for renewable energy, for critical minerals. I was the person that would go and talk to the fishing communities and say, this is what's going on. I would get their input. If anybody in the fishing community had a question, they would reach out to me and I would be the one to provide the answer for them. And that mattered the most to me because these communities are the ones that are affected by offshore energy development. Their livelihoods are potentially at stake, and their cultural heritage is at stake. And so if they can provide input that will tell us how to avoid, minimize, or mitigate that impact, I think that is incredibly important. And so that's why I loved my job. And I come from a fishing family. On my dad's side, my grandfather was a commercial fisherman. And so, he's from Morro Bay, which is where one of the offshore energy development is planned. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel very connected to those communities. And I think that they need a voice and they need someone to represent them in the government.
Keenan, our park ranger.
Yeah, so my job was split basically doing both intertidal, which are kind of the tide pools, as well as kelp forest monitoring. So these biological surveys that I did enabled us to really understand the health of the ecosystems at the Channel Islands National Park. My position was unique because I was the only biologist to do both work above and below water at the park.
You're the guy we learned about in fourth grade, saving the kelp forests.
I mean, I probably wasn't doing it, you know, at that time. But yeah, this is something that I've been working towards kind of my entire career, and have enjoyed it. It's quite rewarding to be able to see these ecosystems and be able to track their changes as part of a long-term monitoring program that has existed for over 40 years.
Liesl, our tribal engagement, why so important, that kind of work?
So I'm an anthropologist, and I was working as a tribal engagement specialist for the Pacific region of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. The work is really important because basically the federal government has a trust responsibility to tribal nations anytime that they propose activities in an area, for example, renewable energy activities onshore or offshore. If those activities affect any kind of tribal historic property, tribal nations need to be consulted with, and oftentimes the information that we get from these consultations, the newly sort of, I would say, more recently recognized indigenous knowledge, incorporating those aspects and different forms of thinking and ways of knowing into ocean energy management and land management. It's pervasive in the entire Department of the Interior. Anthropologists are vital and we need more of them. And there's a certain lack of tribal liaisons department-wide.
So what I'm hearing here is not, you know, desk jobs. This is connection. This is out there. This is talking to people. This is getting a read on what's going on. And these are all things that you were passionate about. And I wanted to get that as the backdrop because I'm sure you've heard this going in, you know, before and now, especially the line that, oh, the federal workers and the state workers too, they're not really doing that much. And some of it can be so niche. Is it really having an impact? Because for all the talk about cost savings, there's an undercurrent with all of this that, you know, we can cut a lot of these people because they're not doing a whole lot of work. So how does that kind of talk affect you, especially now? Ellen, we can start with you.
I would just say that I've been in the field of fisheries biology for a long time now, and I have never seen such a group of hardworking people until I entered the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. I had only been there for 6 months, and I was up till 2 a.m. many times writing study proposals, finishing emails, and so I've never had that much work in my life, and so it's just confusing to me, that line. I don't understand it.
I mean, did any of you get into this for the riches and the millions you were going to make? Or this is a job that takes a lot of time. And Keenan or Liesl, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we got into this line of work to, you know, make a killing, right? This is certainly a passion of ours. And, you know, because it's a passion, we're willing to, you know, put in that extra work. The National Park Service has been historically understaffed and underfunded for many, many years. And so many of us, myself included, were working jobs of multiple people just to accomplish all the tasks that were needed.
Let's talk about how this happened. Different ways for each of you, but these cuts, and some of you might be in this court ruling that's ongoing, and there's going to be appeals about the probationary employees. But Liesl, when it was coming down, what was that like? And you were pretty close to actually, hitting your one-year mark and being, safer than you would have been, I guess. I mean, what was that three-day period like for you?
What actually happened is I was hired by BOEM last month. So I had only been there for a month, but I had worked in another agency, the EEOC, for a year, minus 3 days, as I was let go illegally there as well. And so the rationale is that because I hadn't completed 3 days, I was still a probationary employer and would be let go.
When the DOGE people talked to any of you or your supervisors, take me through that. Did you know what was going on? Did anyone really know what was going on? Or was it, a lot of press reports and a lot of talk about cuts happening and then an email one day? Because we've heard a bunch of stories about this was very unceremonious. And look, a lot of us have worked jobs and we won't sugarcoat it. We've been walked out with a cardboard box. This happens, but it doesn't make it any easier.
So what happened, I had been hearing rumblings on the internet that this was going to happen, that basically probationary workers, they were all going to be fired. There would be no exceptions. So I brought that to one of the supervisors, one of the managers, and I said, is this going to happen? I want to be prepared. Should I take the fork in the road that has been talked about?
You got that email then?
I got 15 of those emails. Yes.
First time you got that email. The subject line, fork in the road. What are you thinking? What is this thing?
It was.
Did you know where it was coming from?
It was weird. I was in a room with a bunch of different people from different agencies. I was with a bunch of National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration employees, and they got the email before I did, a couple hours before. And so it hit them really hard first. And I almost naively assumed that because I was working for an agency that did energy and because the new administration wants energy dominance, I wasn't going to get the email. And so I was just feeling really bad for them as they were trying to get work done, as we were always trying to do, and they're in shock. And then a couple hours later, I got the same email. And at that point, I think the emotion in the room was, well, do we still keep working? What do we do? Do we continue on? Do we just give up? It was very oddly worded. Never gotten an email like that in my life.
Was there any thought to take the fork in the road? Choose the other fork?
Well, because I love my job. Yeah. I love my job. So no, it was a dream job for me. But when I saw it come through saying that the rumblings on the internet saying all probationary employees, no matter what, are going to get fired, I said I should potentially take this fork in the road, even though I don't want to. When I talked to folks in the Pacific region of Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, they said, no, that's not going to happen. We don't think that's going to happen because, yes, we did have to send the list of probationary workers. We don't really think it means anything. We said that what you did and that it's important. And so we don't think the list means anything. So because of that, I didn't take the fork in the road because I really thought my job was safe. And then a couple days later, what the internet said was going to happen happened.
Keenan, what happened to you?
Yeah, very similar situation. I, too, received multiple emails about fork in the road. Myself and many of my colleagues didn't, take that deal. I think one of the concerns that we had with taking that deal, many of us, were so new in our positions and excited to, start our career at the National Park Service. But another fear of ours was that if we were to take that, the way that the wording and phrasing was made it seem like those positions might not be able to be rehired going forward. So, us being in those positions, we wanted to ensure that, those roles continued within our department. I actually received my termination letter in an email. I think all of us did. But I was in a Yosemite National Park at the time, actually. So I received a call from my boss, and he said, hey, I think you're going to be terminated.
You're like in the most beautiful place in the world, working a job you want to work, and then you get that email.
Yeah. It wasn't until that following Tuesday, because it was a holiday weekend, that I actually got to read it. And, you know, reading the phrasing of it, basically saying that we were not being effective in our job, not knowledgeable or had the right skills to hold our job. It was hurtful, right? And untrue.
This is Fired Feds. It's a KNX in-depth special on the fired federal workers and the fight for some of them to keep these jobs. Now,
back to Fired Feds, voices of the government layoffs.
A KNX in-depth special.
Mike Simpson with you here on this KNX special as we talk to people who've lost their jobs in these federal layoffs and who are trying in some cases to get them back. We have Ellen Willis Norton with us, a former fisheries biologist. Keenan Chan, he was our park ranger. And Liesl Drew, tribal engagement and anthropologist. Liesl, I want to get some thoughts from you on the idea that, look, people don't like government waste. Both parties can agree that you don't want to waste money, that maybe there is, you know, quote unquote, we see this phrase all the time, you know, fat to be trimmed. But was this, and again, another phrase we've seen, a hatchet and not a scalpel?
I think that the Trump administration's goal is pretty clear and that they just want to gut every agency and gut anyone who disagrees with the administration. It's a very powerful move when you're trying to take over the government in that way. And that's, you know, been couched in certain terms as being efficient. But what's happened is in no way efficient. Many thousands of people are now on unemployment, which has to be paid out. And there's just no way you could call this. The Department of Government Efficiency is quite transparently a way to take over the government with right-wing folks who want to do things in the capitalist sense, which is where we've come to at this point.
If you were going to cut some things, if you were going to trim, if you were going to make changes, what's the best way to try and do that? I mean, can you find waste in these departments without just cutting jobs all over the place? Did anyone ask you ever about your thoughts on making things work a little bit easier?
No, and that's not generally the purpose of the government. I think you either belong to the club or you don't. To figure out if there's waste, I mean, there's a certain level of waste in any organization that you approach, but you would need to first do an analysis and see where the waste is and then let that go or cut that budget. But that wasn't done. There's no level of analysis here. There's only really rash actions.
Keenan, on the rash actions, you were saying during the break here when we were having a chat, look, layoffs happen. It's a fact of life. A lot of us have been laid off. But there's a certain way to do it. And in this way, I mean, they weren't giving people a lot of grace.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think that being laid off for budgetary needs or, you know, the reality is some people get fired. And that happens. But to be terminated and given the reason for, you know, basically lacking subject matter knowledge and skills was just factually incorrect. And so I think that, you know, if we were given a legitimate reason for our terminations, you know, it is what it is. Everybody, you know, has to deal with that, right? But using a reason that was factually incorrect, you know, we're scientists here, right? We work in facts. And so that was factually incorrect. And so that wasn't something that we felt comfortable with.
Ellen, I see you nodding your head. And when you said, you know, we're scientists, we want some facts. Was there ever a fact sheet that said, oh, she is not living up? I mean, A, B, and C, she didn't do those things that day. Because a lot of these memos said, you're not, you know, as valuable, you're not working as hard, you're not adding as much as, you know, a private employee does. Go and get a different kind of job.
Right. Yeah. I wish, honestly, that that had happened. I would have understood it and not had any anger if I had gotten a sheet saying this is what you did not do. This is what you did not live up to.
Oof, but
it hurts.
At least I got it.
Yeah. At least there's rationality. And you can say, I understand and I'll do better the next time. But there's just no rationality at all. And so I really felt that I had landed exactly where I was meant to be, and I knew I was doing a good job. And so I think that is what made me the angriest, is I knew I'm in the right place, I'm doing the right thing, and I know I am doing a great job. I'm getting the feedback saying that, and then to get a letter saying you're terminated for performance reasons when all of your managers and supervisors are saying the exact opposite is extremely infuriating.
What brought you here? Was it this job? And it's not cheap to live here. I mean, people give up things to go get a job that they think they're going to stay at forever. It's never like, you know, some of us arrive at our dream job and we go, oh, this is so wonderful and everything's lining up perfectly. Other times it's like, yeah, I really want to do this, so I'm going to change my life in these following ways, right?
Right. So I, before this, I was in academia. I was a postdoctoral researcher in the Environmental Markets Lab at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Before that, I was at University of California, Santa Cruz, doing research as well. When I was at UCSB, I had a side gig. I lived on a ranch, and because you,
nice.
as we've said, you do not make money as a scientist. That is not something you do. And so I would work all
Unless
day.
Unless you're Bill Nye. He's the only one.
Yeah, right. So I would do my day job, and then I'd come home and spend 2 to 3 hours doing barn chores. And that meant that I got to live for free. But because of this job, it was so much work that I had to move off of that property. And so I moved into a regular apartment that is extremely expensive because it's Southern California. And so I went from $0 in rent to rent that I can no longer pay at this point. And also my partner, he changed his job in order to be local here. And so he actually went from a corporate job to an academic job. So he actually decreased his salary in order to be here with me. So now we are living in a much more expensive place. And I don't have a job, and he has a lower paying job than he used to because of this.
Liesl, same kind of situation, similarities there?
I relocated from Colorado to accept this job. So living in Southern California, as Ellen has said, is incredibly expensive. The rent is maybe three times as much. And suddenly people who find themselves on unemployment checks, it's maybe not even enough to cover your basic needs after a huge chunk of rent is taken out.
Yeah. How is it trying to figure out what you're going to do at this point? And are you in anger mode? Are you in I'm still processing? Are you in sad, depressed mode? And, you know, we have all the stages of grief.
I guess when I do talk about it, I guess I sort of get back into anger mode. But part of me thinks good riddance, just because I think the administration now is incredibly immature in treating people as if, you know, they don't matter, and basically sacrificing a lot of people's livelihoods for the sake of what they call efficiency, but is really just a purge of this.
How does that sit with you? I'm interested to move somewhere for a job and really believe in it and have studied hard for it. And then at one point, you know, believe in what you're doing and you know, I guess what, proud federal worker, to then that is almost like a switch getting flipped mentally.
It's a big... the way that I think that they let most people go is that they gave them about 30 minutes either to vacate their offices or saying, well, in 30 minutes, you're going to get a letter that's dismissing you, out of the blue, which is not a very graceful way of letting people go or telling them why they're being let go or even given a reason. If we want to dig into efficiency, at least show me an analysis, show me the data of how my job is not worth anything anymore.
This is Fired Feds. It's a KNX in-depth special on the fired federal workers. We're going to have much more coming up.
From KNX News, 97.1 FM.
This is Fired Feds, Voices of the Government Layoffs.
A KNX in-depth special.
Mike Simpson with you here on this KNX News special. If you're just joining us, we have three Southern Californians here. Federal workers who were pushed out under these cuts are fired feds. Ellen Willis Norton was a biologist, a Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, Department of Interior, focused on preserving fisheries. Keenan Chan, biological services technician, a diver, a park ranger, Channel Islands National Park in the Park Service. And Liesl Drew, anthropologist, tribal engagement specialist, working with California Native tribes on shoreline and offshore energy projects, Bureau of Ocean Management, Interior Department. And Interior Department is key. Some people don't know what the Interior Department does, and that's a story that kind of resurfaces every year. But the Interior Department is on this list of the court ruling that came through today. The judge saying, we got to bring back the probationary employees at six departments, including the Interior. So you were all probationary employees, either through getting the job, you know, new or being promoted, and it works both ways. How are you feeling with that ruling? Is this, okay, some sort of hope, or is this, all right, I'm back in limbo? Ellen, we'll start with you, and we'll go around the room.
I guess I don't feel hope. I feel a renewed sense of anxiety.
Because you haven't had enough.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, I think because, first of all, we all three of us talked, and none of us have had any communication from our supervisors or managers, so we don't know what's going on. I'd say that this is hopeful in the sense that we all know that this was illegal, and so that has been found to be true. But the reason I lack hope is because it's pretty obvious that if we do go back to work, we will be the first to be cut for a reduction in force, which is legal. I guess the only good thing that could come of it is that we would potentially get back pay because it was illegal. But I've, you know, the assumption is still that I've lost my dream job.
Yeah. Keenan?
Yeah, I think I am certainly, you know, I agree with what Ellen said. I think that I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I think that with this ruling, you know, we have the potential to be reinstated at our jobs. And so I'm, cautiously optimistic about that. Once we are, you know, back in our jobs, I don't know kind of the future after that point. Will we be RIFT, as Ellen mentioned?
So yeah, brought in again only to get laid off in a different way.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Liesl?
Yeah, I think I just echo what Ellen and Kian said, because we could just be pulled back in only to get fired again, as we all are probationary.
What's the plan? Are you looking for, I mean, obviously you lose a job, you start looking for other jobs, but do you want to go back to something in this vein? Is there a legal fight in your future? There's all these lawsuits. Are you thinking about joining any of these?
So for me, I joined, or I didn't join any of the class actions, but I did file an appeals. And so, you know, I think ultimately all of us believe in, you know, whatever agency we worked for is mission. We wanted to do our jobs, right, and do them well. But, you know, to go back, I think will involve some degree of building trust, because we're uncertain about the future if we do go back.
We talk a lot about Doge. Let's talk about Elon Musk. Nobody elected Elon Musk. A lot of people voted for Donald Trump. He won the presidency, right? So if he wanted to cut, I guess it's under his purview to start cutting. Elon Musk is doing a lot of the cutting. Doge is doing a lot of the cutting. How do we feel about the power that he has consolidated for himself so far? A look around the room.
I think he's a big technocrat, autocrat who's shaking hands with the right people to get where he is now with Trump. And it's a very scary duo to have in place, as we've seen already.
You know, I think trying to become more efficient as a government is important. I understand that. And so, you know, the potential, you know, benefits that Doge could or could have brought, you know, is there, I suppose. But, you know, speaking from the National Park Service already being understaffed, underfunded, you know, we were already working at, you know, maximum efficiency given the staff and resources that we had. Really, if we wanted to be more efficient, if we wanted to work efficiently, we actually needed to be better funded and better or more staffed, actually.
What are you hearing from some of the other, you know, park rangers that they were pushed out of their jobs, of what it's going to be like at some of these parks, which we all, it's a very American thing. We value these places because they are spectacular. But what happens when the workforce is shaved down to the level that it's been shaved down to?
There's so many different effects that can be seen at different parks based on the people who are, you know, terminated, and based on the park's needs and resources. So, you know, for one, people might see campsites being closed, long lines, you know, visitor centers being reduced in hours. But you also might see things like, you know, search and rescue operations being reduced. And certainly in my case, the research going on at many of these parks that are long-term and important monitoring programs, that's going to be incredibly reduced.
Liesl, I wonder about a brain drained, lack of a better term. But you have, everybody's in this room has degrees, and you speak how many languages? I mean, when you force out new employees or employees that have been promoted, and eventually you get retirements of who's still there, what happens to some of these places and all these programs that, you know, were doing the work before?
Could you clarify your question about the what programs exactly are you referring to?
Listen, you are an incredibly intelligent person, right? You worked super hard to become an anthropologist. You've got, what, a PhD? You speak 3-4 languages, I think, you told us before?
I've got a master in 4 languages.
Correct. Okay, yeah. That's all things that I do not have. So do you worry that there will be a reduction in, you know, that kind of level of worker in the federal workforce? We could use a lot of you to do a lot of important things.
Absolutely, and thank you for the confidence. There was already a lack of anthropologists and anthropological inquiry in the federal government. I saw a lot more of indigenous knowledge, for example, being promoted into academic and just research materials with BOEM, for example, than the National Park Service. But you know, cutting these kinds of programs, and as my other panelist has mentioned, at the NPS, it will mean a reduction in force, a reduction in the operational elements of national parks, as well as tribal people's right to access their ancestral lands as they have to go through these entrance and fee stations. And if they're not being populated, then there's no way to access the land, which is the right.
Ellen, you have been nodding along. I mean, the new employees get pushed out. Some of the people who just got promoted, who worked through merit to get a new job because they were doing good, they got pushed out too. So what happens?
I would just say that for those of us, everybody can't see us. We're all young people. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a common theme in this. We are probationary workers, which means that we are often just starting our careers. We have invested so much in our education and getting to this point. And I think there will be a brain drain. I mean, in terms of the science world is small. In my community, I feel that the scientific community in general is under attack. There are so many people in my community from every scientific community I've been a part of who have lost their jobs, who don't know where to go because they are worried that if they go back to universities, that the grants won't be there anymore. And there's a lot of people that are looking for jobs outside of the country at this point because they're scared that there is no longer a field for them here.
What does that do to us? You know, supposed to be number one in all these fields, supposed to be pushing ahead.
I mean, as you said, it's a brain drain, right? And, you know, there's this conflict between feeling that you want to fight for your country and you want to stay and you want to, this is your home and you've done the research here. I mean, my expertise is in the fishing community and the fisheries along this coast. And so to leave that is to leave those people and to leave that ecosystem and you don't want to do that. You want to resist that. And I think that's the case for everybody that is doing science, that they feel this conflict of how do I maintain a career? How do I maintain my livelihood? But then also, how do I stay to fight for the communities that I serve and the ecosystems that I try to protect?
So what do you do now, if you've thought that far ahead in terms of, you know, that battle, wanting to stay and fight for those people that you know versus I got to live. I have to support myself somehow. I've got this degree. Where can I use it?
I don't have an answer yet. I go back and forth on it. I wrestle. I mean, I've applied to a job in Ireland. I have maintained.
Partner's going to be moving all over the world with you now.
right?
You came here, now we're going to Ireland.
But also, you know, my family's in California. We've been here for 5 generations.
It's a choice you don't want to have to make.
Right.
You don't want to have to move to Ireland. I mean, beautiful,
no.
But
no.
Also, you know, it's not here.
Right. Exactly. Yes. I mean, I maintain some hope that the work will somehow continue in another way. I don't know. I think a lot remains to be seen. A lot is up in the air at this point. And we're kind of in such a stage of uncertainty, and you just have to learn to live in that place of uncertainty for the time being.
Keenan, would it have been different if it wasn't Elon Musk and Doge? If it was, you know, the cabinet secretary that said, okay, we're going to start cutting and we're going to make big cuts in these departments, and that's where the layoffs came from. Would it be different in your mind?
Look, I mean, ultimately, we all served the American people in our jobs. We didn't serve an administration. We were apolitical in our jobs. And so, you know, ultimately, we are there to serve the American people. And so, yeah, I think that it doesn't really matter who it comes from. You know, we are going to do our job no matter what. So, whether or not these cuts came from, you know, Elon or, you know, an elected official, you know, ultimately we are there to do our job, and you know, we'll listen to whatever we're asked to do.
What's your plan now?
You know, I did obviously put in an appeals, but you know, right now I'm exploring options of different you know, jobs and whatnot. I think that you know, really the American people should feel proud of the people that they effectively were employing, right? We are subject matter experts in our field. You know, the people that I'm, you know, working with and sitting here at this desk with are, you know, experts in their field. And, you know, ultimately, like, that's something that I think the Americans should be proud of, that they were employing these really incredible people to do the work here in America, and, you know, promote this, you know, revolutionary and pioneering research that's happening and work here in America.
A lot of people, you ask them about their job and they say, oh, yeah, I got a good job, or I got a fine job. I can tell you a little bit about it. I mean, you all would sit for an hour and talk about what led you to it and why you're so proud of it. And that's kind of a different, special thing, right? I mean, to be in that kind of a position, not everybody gets that.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate to, you know, be in the line of work that we're in. But at the same time, you know, we've all worked incredibly hard, as many people do, to get the jobs that they have. So, yeah, you know, we're very skilled and knowledgeable in our fields. And, you know, I think that's important to recognize.
This is Fired Feds. It's a KNX News In-Depth Special.
Back to Fired Feds, Voices of the Government Layoffs.
A KNX In-Depth Special.
Mike Simpson here with you with some Southern California workers who've lost their jobs in these government layoffs. Ellen Wilson Norton, fisheries biologist. Keenan Chan, our park ranger. Liesl Drew, anthropologist, tribal engagement. Let's do some more politics here for a second. There was the back and forth on the government shutting down, will it, won't it. Democrats seem to have an appetite to do that and then sort of walked it back later today. Is that the way to fight some of this, or is there a better way, Ellen?
Oh, that's a great question. You know,
because government shutdowns, federal workers know, are not good for anybody at the end of the day. But then there's been all these layoffs. So,
right. I mean, if the government shuts down, everybody's going to feel the effects of what a reduction in force would be pretty immediately versus in a little while when the reductions in force happen. So no matter what, we will be feeling the effects, whether it's right now or whether it's in a few months. Yeah, so that's what I would say, is that if it's now or if it's later, we're gonna feel the effects of all of these people that serve the public no longer being there. And
this is for no matter who you voted for, right? Because, you know, you work with the fisheries communities, which, you know, I don't know the mix of voters, but you work with Democrats and Republicans. You work with Trump voters. So if you're not there, what happens to them?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I do work with, actually, I'd say majority Trump voters, and I serve them. And And they are losing out right now because now there is no one that can respond to their emails, that can go talk to them, that they can get their input. There is no one that can go back to my agency and say, hey, you know, I heard that these people are fishing here and this would be the problem if this development occurred here. And so this is what we should do instead. And, you know, they can try to do that with the staff they have left. But that was my main job. And so no matter who you voted for, if you are in the fishing community, you now don't have a person to serve you.
With the staff they have left is an interesting phrase, because Keenan, you were saying during the break that there's almost, you know, when we talk about efficiency, there was almost, in your perspective, no way to be efficient because you were always kind of running to catch up. There were never really enough workers, right?
That's right. Yeah. I think that, you know, you could argue that we were, you know, potentially inefficient in how we were working because we were not given the resources that we really needed in order to be efficient. Because in order to be efficient, you need to be able to do your job. But ultimately, we were doing the jobs of many people. Each one of us was doing the jobs of multiple people. Positions have not been filled in multiple years. So this goes far beyond, you know, this administration, right? The understaffing at the National Park Service is well known, and it's a chronic problem.
So when people in a few weeks, in a few months, start complaining even more about the lines at Yosemite or the trash, or they can't get in and the tickets are different and all these systems in the campsites are full, that's just, you know, more of an after effect of what we've already seen going on leading up to this.
Yeah, it's a product of, you know, even more reduction in staffing and resources.
Liesl, since Keenan and Ellen have both had this question, it's your turn. What happens without you for the people you've been helping?
So I was told that there was actually a need, and I know that there is a need generally for tribal engagement and tribal liaisons and tribal engagement specialists across the government. So what I was being trained to do is work very closely with our Pacific Region tribal liaison to develop better relationships with the tribe so that we can consult with them effectively on any kind of activities that we're proposing in renewable or non-renewable energy. And so if we lose those connections, if we lose that skill set through anthropology, through ethnography, through these relationships that are really trying to rebuild trust from the federal government's obvious lack of trust from tribes to the federal government, that trust is trying to be regained. So without effective social scientists to perform in those roles, we will lose that trust again.
You said you get angry when you talk about this. How are you doing? I mean, to have
right
a master's in the four languages, yeah.
now you're
on unemployment. I mean,
yeah,
really.
I mean, I'm on food benefits and unemployment, and I'm not ashamed of that, but it's wholly unnecessary.
Right, so it's
and
there
it's a
for,
huge,
but also,
it's
like,
a huge waste.
Yeah,
you know, it
you
is
worked
a brain
hard to get
drain.
To where you're at. Yeah.
It is a brain drain, as you've said, and as Ellen has mentioned, and I think that's exactly their goal, is to drain the government of anyone who values any kind of independent critical thinking or they're eliminating intellectual complexity so that they have no people who resist them. And that's pretty scary.
I want to try and find some hopeful note to end on while we got a couple minutes. I don't know where to find it, but what have you learned about you maybe during this, Ellen?
That's a great question. I think I have learned that, you know, I've before this, I really was doing research that was not very applied. I mean, it was applied. It was saying, okay, well, if fish move with global change, yeah, what happens to the community?
Well, papers were going
out. I write
out
a bunch of papers about it. You know, you can look at my Google Scholar.
We
I'm
love
doing
good,
pretty good.
We love a good write-up. Yeah.
But, you know, what I've learned entering this role is that I do want to make sure that the fishing communities along the West Coast are taken care of, continue to exist, that their livelihoods are maintained. I want to make sure I enjoy the fact that I was working on offshore energy development because it is critical, but working on energy development in a way that tries to avoid and minimize impacts. So basically, I've learned about myself that I do want to be in a role where I actually feel like I am making a difference, that I am serving a community, that I am helping our, you know, our energy crisis while also helping protect our ecosystems.
And I think that's maybe true for both of you, right? Despite taking this hit, I mean, are you still in a place where at the end of the day, you want to help people?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I think that that's why we worked for the federal government to begin with, right? We believed in, you know, our jobs and believed in, you know, our mission for the Park Service, for one. It's, you know, preserve and protect the lands and these places and the organisms that, you know, lived within those.
All right. Ellen, Keenan, Liesl. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to me.
Thank you
for having us.